We'll move to case number 5 this morning, which is number 101612, United States versus Norris. Ms. Bluen?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The issue on appeal is whether the District Court erred in determining the seizure of John Norris was a valid and permissible Terry stop. It was not. The seizure was not a valid and permissible Terry stop because the Terry stop started and ended while Norris was within his curtilage. Norris within the curtilage of his own home. And you cannot have a Terry stop on curtilage. Curtilage is afforded the same protection as a person's home.
This curtilage argument wasn't made in the district court. As I understand the record, there was a reference to curtilage, sort of an afterthought in the final remarks of counsel when the suppression motion concluded, but the precise curtilage argument that's being made here wasn't advanced in the district court.
Well, Your Honor, the curtilage argument was actually raised in opening and in closing, but it was summarily dismissed by the district court. The government did not argue that it was not curtilage, and the record basically speaks for itself. We have several photographs that were entered into evidence that support the curtilage argument. And I'd like to go through some of those photographs now. The first one is A00153, and basically it's a picture of John Norris's home, which is on the corner of 10th and Winfield. And in this photograph, you can look down Winfield, which is where the encounter took place, and it basically shows a continuous line of fence surrounding his home. It's a chain-link fence in the front and the side portion of his home, and it changes to a contiguous 6-foot-tall wooden privacy fence. There's a small little inset in between the two fences from where the chain link fence turns to a wooden privacy fence, and that's actually stairs where the encounter took place. Also in the photograph, you can see a cement retaining wall around the full front and side of his home, and the fences are abut that retaining wall that shows a delineation of his privacy. In the next photograph, A00155, demonstrates a photograph of this area where the encounter actually took place. The back of John Norris's home is raised from the public sidewalk. When you exit his home, there's actually a step. It's 2 to 3 inches, which is visible in some of the photographs, not really this one. There's like an 8-foot cement slab, and then there's steps that lead down into the public sidewalk. But those slab and steps are all inset into the retaining wall, and a portion of the cement slab is actually behind the privacy gate. If the privacy fence, the 6-foot wooden fence gate, is shut, some of that slab is actually contained within there. Now, this area, the steps and the cement slab, we refer to as the back stoop in our briefings, and I will refer to it as the back stoop in this argument. We know that the back stoop is curtilage from applying the Dunn factors. The Dunn factors demonstrate that this area is, in fact, the curtilage of John Norris's home. First Dunn factor is proximity. This area is immediately adjacent to his home. In fact, when John Norris said that he was actually tased, he was in the process of reaching for the doorknob of his back door. This is all within a few feet. This is an urban setting. It's all within a few feet of his home.
You know, the problem I have here goes back to my initial question, counsel. This argument was never made in the district court. The suppression motion was based on a challenge to the search warrant and then a request for a Franks hearing, and there was an offhand reference to the idea of curtilage at the end of the hearing. Because the district court kind of redirected the focus to the Terry stop issue, and the Dunn factors were not addressed. We don't have any factual findings. It's a little hard for us to address this issue on appeal because we don't have those findings by the district court on the curtilage issue.
That's true. That in the district court level, they did not go into analysis of the Dunn factors. The court
wasn't asked to.
Well, then this court can make that decision de novo. And I submit to you that based on the analysis that I'm going to go through with the photographs, the court will have enough information to make that determination that this is, in fact, curtilage. And I submit that if this court determines that there needs to be additional factual evidence, that it gets remanded for a determination on whether this is, in fact, curtilage or not.
Okay. So you're asking us to make that curtilage determination based on the photos, because we don't have testimony about this other than
essentially the photos and case law applying, you know, to similar situated areas. One of the points that the government did bring up is that this area is very close to a public sidewalk, but this is not determinative in whether this area is curtilage or not, because as I said before, this is an urban setting. This is not somebody with acres and acres of property where they're able to remove themselves from public right-of-way. This area is enclosed. It's enclosed, one, by the retaining wall. It's enclosed partially by the privacy fence. There's also a separation in elevation that provides this type of enclosure. The steps are higher than the sidewalk. It's not on the same level plane. It's not open to the public area.
I'm looking at the photos, and it doesn't look enclosed to me. It looks like the fence runs along sort of flush with the house, exposing the stoop and the steps.
In fact, there's a gate. There is a gate that's open in the photographs. The gate is on the level of, I think it looks like to be the third step. So certainly the fourth step in the cement slab is definitely enclosed when the gate is closed. And when you go back to the 153 photo, I think it demonstrates that the fence is removed somewhat from the house. It's a continuous line, but because of there's no way to properly fence in the stairs at that same property line that the rest of the fencing takes place. In other words, where the chain link fence and the wooden fence are all in the same line, there's no way to make them meet because there's steps there. So the gate, in fact, is moved up a little bit.
The chain link fence comes at a right angle to a wooden fence that then connects to the house, but the gate is flush with the house, exposing the stoop and the three steps to public view.
The gate, I believe, is on the other side, and I believe it's flush with
the house.
I don't believe it's flush with the house. I think it's flush with, are you looking at 155?
I am.
I think it's flush with, I look at that photo, I think the gate is flush with the left-hand portion of the privacy fence. So the gate would open from left to right, so it would actually line up. So the part of the privacy fence on the right-hand side of the picture that goes from the chain link fence to the home?
No, because there's a section of the wooden fence that attaches perpendicular to the chain link fence and perpendicular to the house, and then the gate is flush parallel to the house. And that's where some testimony might have been nice on this.
Well, let us, this is an interesting discussion, but the police also arrived with a search warrant for the home and for the person of your client.
They did. They arrived with a search warrant. But I think that what's distressing in the underlying case is that they found that it was a Terry stop.
Yeah, but let's suppose they... Why couldn't this be supported just on the basis of a search warrant?
The district court didn't find that...
I understand that.
I suppose arguably it could be. I think the problem
More than arguably. They had a valid search warrant. And they came to execute it, whether he's in, about, near, wherever the curtilage, so what?
Right, and on that I just have to base it on the record that the court found that the search warrant was not executed, that it was in fact a Terry stop that took place while John Norris was on or within his curtilage. I'm going to save some time for rebuttal.
But you do agree, had the district court not talked about, got all wrapped up in this whether curtilage was even an issue, but hadn't got into Terry v. Ohio and just had analyzed it as a typical case with a search warrant that authorized the search of the house and the person. They arrive, he runs, they see him allegedly throw something away, you've got hot pursuit, you've got all kinds of reasons why a court could find that the search here was permissible.
Yes, Your Honor. I take issue with the hot pursuit also. I know that's something that the government brought up. All that's in the record, even when you look at just Detective Young's testimony, when the police arrived, he was on a step. They said, stop, and he may have gone up two steps.
Well, but when he, at the sentencing hearing, I think he testified that he lied at the suppression hearing about whether he had a weapon or not.
That's correct.
So we've got a lot of problems here.
But I'm basing my analysis on Detective Young's testimony.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Minka.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. Matthew Rinka on behalf of the United States. For at least three reasons, district court did not err in denying the defendant's motion to suppress in this case. Chief among these reasons is that the encounter between John Norris and the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department on the day in question was a Terry stop, and simply a Terry stop. Second, even if it was not a Terry stop, the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department had a valid search warrant lawfully issued by a Superior Court judge in Marion County, which allowed both the search of Norris's residence and the search of Norris himself, which necessarily required a seizure of Norris to effect that search. And the third reason is, even if Norris was, the issue of curtilage, standing within the curtilage of his house when he was initially seen by the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, Norris cannot attempt to evade the lawful execution of the search warrant, lawful execution of the process, by running back into his house. And therefore, the police officers, given the circumstances that they had, were lawfully authorized to seize him temporarily to bring the situation under control.
During a period of observation prior to the issuance of the warrant, I believe there was surveillance of this locale, was there not?
Yes, Judge, there was.
And had other people been seen in that house or entering and leaving the house?
The testimony on the record from the detective was that he had observed Mr. Norris entering and leaving the house through that very same door, up and down those stairs, out into the street, interacting with people on the street, both passersby and in vehicles. And the experienced testimony of the officer was, in his judgment, based on what he was seeing, Mr. Norris was engaged in drug trafficking activity and hand-to-hand transactions, both with vehicles and passersby on the street.
So any movement toward the house could, in fact, have been an attempt to secrete or destroy evidence.
Absolutely, Judge, and that's why it's in the hot pursuit issue and the destruction of evidence and the exception to the warrant requirement is included in our brief, but the detective actually, on direct exam from the government, indicated that he had two fears when Norris turned around and started fumbling around in his pants and going back towards the house. One was he was destroying evidence, and the second one was he was looking for or reaching for a gun. The police officers could not see him. And you see the pictures. It is a narrow, confined area. There are two other unknown. Well, one individual was known to the police. The other individual is completely unknown, lurking about right at the bottom of those stairs.
Extricating a person, an armed person from a house is a very different operation from stopping them in the open.
I'm sorry, Judge?
Extricating a person from the home, an armed person from the home, would have been a much more precarious operation than having stopped him, taken him into some sort of, limited his freedom somehow or another in the open.
Without question. And in fact, that was the tenor of Detective Young's testimony, was that his goal was to stop Norris before he got into the house, and that's why he deployed the taser in that particular instance. But with respect to the curtilage The only testimony, and I, just very briefly, the court well knows that it is the defendant's burden to show that he had some reasonable expectation of privacy in this curtilage area that he claims. First of all, Mr. Norris did not raise the curtilage issue until his reply brief to the government's response. When questioned about that, trial counsel for Mr. Norris indicated, well, he didn't think the government would simply call this a Terry stop. In other words, he didn't think the government would recognize the very plain issue that was present here and apply the law. The curtilage was raised in a reply, and at that point, the only testimony about a gate, the presence of a gate at the top of those stairs, came when counsel for the government specifically asked Detective Young, is there a gate there? And the only testimony is from Detective Young that I've been able to determine in the transcript, says Detective Young's response is, there is a gate. It's kind of confusing, words of that effect, but it blocks the view of the garage. If the court is to read the transcript, which I'm sure it has and it probably will again, the court will note that in all of the testimony from Detective Young, the days that he was watching and surveilling that house and watching Mr. Norris run up and down the stairs, there's no mention of any gate obstructing his view of Mr. Norris entering and coming out of the house. The pictures that the government admitted into evidence are the pictures that Norris on appeal attaches to his brief. Those are the government's pictures, and the court will note there is no evidence of any gate obstructing any view.
What was your purpose in asking that the pictures be admitted? What were you trying to show?
I was trying to show, Judge, that there was no gate. It's an unobstructed view of the stairs, the back patio area, and the door, which is important, particularly with respect to the Santana case. And the Supreme Court has clearly ruled that what one shows to the world on their back patio and with an unobstructed view is, in essence, a public place. It becomes a public place. Even if there were a gate, the government would submit it would not block off the view of those three stairs that lead down to the sidewalk. And the unchallenged testimony of Detective Young was, when they exited the van, Mr. Norris was standing on that very last step.
The garage is a detached garage at the back of the property?
That is correct, Judge. It is. The backyard basically separates the house from the detached garage.
So the wooden gate obscures the backyard, but not the stoop and the stairs.
I'm sorry?
The wooden gate, as opposed to the chain link fence, the wooden fence with the gate obscures the backyard and
that was the testimony
back of the garage, but not the stoop.
That the testimony was that the gate obstructs the view or obscures the view of the blocks the view of the garage. And that was the extent of the testimony that the government elicited from him on that particular issue.
Are you relying on waiver doctrine?
I'm sorry?
Are you invoking waiver doctrine?
Yes, Judge.
Okay. How didn't you breathe?
That's why I'm asking. Right. Yeah. I think there was a
There was a spirited maybe? Conversation in our office, to be perfectly blunt, and we took the position that we weren't going to raise that issue. We didn't want to be seemingly raising frivolous issues because at the suppression hearing, the court did note that the defendant's position with respect to suppression had kind of started to meander a bit. He started out with, oh, the PC in the affidavit is not there. There were lies and mistruths. And then all of a sudden, when the government said, well, wait a second, the warrant doesn't really matter. This was a Terry stop. Then he comes up with, well, oh, wait a second, I was in the curtilage of my house. And the district court noted that. And there was a discussion about curtilage. And in fact, at some point, about halfway through the testimony of Detective Young, there was a discussion between government counsel and the district court with respect to additional evidence being taken. And the government's position was, well, the warrant is immaterial. We're not even going to go down that road. And the district court suggested that perhaps in the alternative we may consider that. And the government briefly considered it and did go down that road. And we elicited more testimony about the evidence that was put into the affidavit, the reliability of the confidential informant, and all of that so that we could support, if the need arose, attack on the warrant itself on appeal. So we didn't want to appear as though that the issue had never been touched.
But ordinarily, where the reasonableness of the search turns on the question of curtilage, we would expect a much more developed record and some findings on that, which we just don't have here. But, it doesn't sound like to me that you're asserting waiver. You said from the podium that you were, but as Judge Ripple pointed out, you didn't in your brief.
Oh, I'm sorry. We are not.
You are not relying on waiver.
It's not in our brief, and we have not, and we did not at the time. And I'm sorry if I...
When I asked the question a few moments ago and you said, yes, you're invoking waiver, that's a misstatement.
You're waiving waiver.
It was a misstatement. I'm sorry. I misheard the question. I thought you were asking if I was aware of the issue of waiver.
You're waiving waiver.
We did not raise it, and we did not raise it for that very long-winded response I just gave you. I apologize.
Now I get it.
So in any event, for all of those reasons, and again, quite frankly, the very first issue, the issue that the district court did address, this was a Terry stop. He was out in the public view. He was leaving his house. He was on the last step. He saw the police. He turned to flee. All the evidence that they had prior to it, suggesting he was engaged in drug trafficking activity, the throwing of the bag, the fumbling with the pants, clearly supported reasonable suspicion to stop John Norris on that day. And so the government would ask the court to affirm the suppression issue in this case.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Bullen, how much time? You were out of time, but I'll give you a minute in rebuttal if you have something else to say.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think what we just heard was that curtilage was, in fact, raised below. We heard it was raised in John Norris's reply brief. We also heard that the government presented these photos to rebut the argument of curtilage. So I think that what we have here on the record is photos that show at this moment the gate was open, at this moment in time for these photographs. We don't know that the gate is normally open. We don't know to what extent that area is used for the intimate activities that are involved in the home. And I think that at a minimum, there should be a remand if the court cannot make that determination that that was, in fact, curtilage. What we're asking for now is that finding that the encounter is not a valid Terry stop, to vacate and reverse the district court's denial of Norris's motion to suppress, vacate the district court's entry of final judgment, and remand this matter to permit Norris to withdraw his guilty plea and any additional proceedings. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.